Welcome to the Logan River Academy Parent Podcast, the place where connection meets growth. Here, we're not just raising awareness, we're raising the bar. Whether you're navigating the challenges of residential treatment or celebrating the wins, big or small, this is your space to learn, reflect, and grow right alongside us. So buckle up, take a breath, and let's dive into real conversations, expert insights, and meaningful support for the journey ahead.
Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we are taking a pretty hefty stack of recent research and really diving headfirst into the, let's call it the digital reflection pool.
Mm-hmm.
We all know the headlines, right? Social media is bad for your mental health. Mm-hmm. But the actual science is, well, it's so much more precise and frankly more fascinating than that.
It really is. We're talking about how these online interactions connect directly to really fundamental things, you know, like self-esteem, loneliness, even how you see your own body.
And the scale of this is just massive.
Oh, huge. I mean, the data we're looking at from 2016 to 2022 shows the average user spends 2 to 3 hours every single day.
Wow.
But here's the foundational point from all these studies, and it's so important. The platform itself is, well, it's neutral. It's not inherently good or bad.
It's what you do with it.
It is entirely about how you engage with it. That's what determines the outcome.
Exactly. And that's our mission for this deep dive. We want to move past that, you know, that simple screen time is bad idea.
Right.
And really get into the mechanics.
Right.
We're going to unpack the difference between just mindlessly scrolling versus actively engaging. We'll look at how our self-worth gets tied to likes.
And we'll even explore why these tiny little online communities might just be the key to, well, to our digital wellness.
Okay, let's unpack this. We should probably start with the concept that researchers have identified as, like, the main psychological fault line here.
Let's do it. That fault line is called SMCSE.
SMCSE.
Yeah, social media contingent self-esteem. It's a core concept. And it basically means a state where your own sense of self-worth is directly contingent on what happens on social media.
So it's conditional. My feeling good about myself depends on the platform's reaction.
Precisely. The SMCSE user is really relying on those external metrics, you know, getting approval, avoiding criticism, just general success on there to feel okay.
So you're basically outsourcing your confidence. You're handing over your internal stability to, what, the comment section, to your follower count.
That's a great way to put it. It shows a real lack of autonomy, right? You're not engaging because you're interested. You're engaging out of this compulsion, this pressure to keep getting that validation.
And the researchers actually have a way of measuring this, right?
They do. They developed a scale for it. And it includes statements like, I feel better about myself when I update social media and get positive feedback.
Or the flip side, I imagine.
Exactly. When others criticize me or ignore me on social media, it makes me feel really bad. That dependence is the absolute root of the problem.
So what happens when that's your starting point? What are the downstream consequences?
Well, that contingency directly predicts problematic use. The research is clear that a high SMCSE score was a huge predictor for social media addiction.
Addiction in what sense?
In the clinical sense. Things like salience, where the platform becomes the most important thing in your life, or mood modification, where you're using it just to change how you feel.
And withdrawal, I assume.
And withdrawal, that intense, irritable feeling when you can't get to it. It's a truly dependent, obsessive attachment.
Okay, here's where I thought the research got really, really interesting. This high SMCSE, this fragile self-esteem, it was also strongly associated with having these dense identity bubbles.
Echo chambers.
Echo chambers, exactly.
It's such a powerful insight, isn't it? Because think about it. If your self-esteem is totally dependent on approval, you literally cannot tolerate being challenged.
You can't handle it.
You can't. So you start to build an environment, your echo chamber, where everything you believe, everything you are, is just constantly affirmed, validated.
So it's not just an emotional weakness. It's a structural thing. It actually drives people toward insularity, towards polarization.
It does. And the research shows that when your self-worth is on the line like that, the emotional reactions, the highs and lows, they're just way more extreme.
So one nice comment makes you feel amazing.
Ecstatic. But one negative comment, one troll, can send you spiraling because the foundation was never stable to begin with.
It's an unsustainable feedback loop.
Completely.
Okay, so we've established that internal fragility. Let's zoom out a bit. What about the link between just the sheer amount of time we spend, what the research calls SMUF?
Social media usage frequency.
Right, SMUF. The link between that and these two huge psychological states, self-efficacy and loneliness.
And this is where we hit a genuine paradox. The initial finding from this longitudinal data in China was that an increase in SMUF.
So just spending more time online.
Right. It was a positive predictor of both increased loneliness and enhanced self-efficacy.
Wait, how does that work? That seems totally contradictory. You feel more capable, but also more alone.
It does seem contradictory, but it all comes down to the complex role of social support. It's the mediator. It's the bridge between your usage and the outcome. We have to kind of pull them apart.
Okay, so let's start with the good news then, the boost in self-efficacy.
For self-efficacy, the social support you get online played what's called a complete mediating role, meaning the only reason you feel more capable is because of that support. As you spend more time, you grow your social network, you get more socio-emotional support. And that support is what boosts your confidence.
So if you took the social support away,
the benefit vanishes completely. The positive effect is 100% routed through that feeling of connection.
That makes a lot of sense. You feel more capable because you have more people, more resources to draw on. But then why does the loneliness still go up?
And that's the tragic part of the paradox. For loneliness, social support only acts as a partial buffer.
It helps, but not enough.
Exactly. It helps a bit. But that increased usage, the SMUF, still has this direct, independent effect on loneliness that the support just can't cancel out.
And this is where that social substitution theory comes in.
It validates it perfectly. Your online communication, it's efficient, it feels supportive, your network looks huge, but you are replacing deep, high-quality, face-to-face interactions.
With high-quantity, surface-level stuff.
Exactly. It's like digital junk food for the soul. Yeah. You feel full, but you're not actually nourished.
That is a brilliant analogy. Now, there's another layer here because the impact of all this time online, it's not stable. It's not the same for everyone.
No, it's not. And this is a devastating finding. The study found that for people who started with low self-efficacy, more social media use actually helped. It gave them a confidence boost.
But there's a but.
There's a big but. For those who are already highly confident, you know, people at the 85th percentile of self-efficacy, SMUF became a negative factor.
So for the top 15% of confident users, it actually hurt them. Why?
Upward social comparison.
Constantly seeing other people's perfect curated lives.
Imagine you're a successful entrepreneur. You're already confident in what you do. But then you scroll past 50 posts of rival companies launching, peers on luxury vacations.
Mm-hmm.
They all seem to be doing more with less effort.
You start to think, am I falling behind?
I should be doing more, and it actively destabilizes that high confidence you started with. The platform's competitive nature eventually erodes everyone's self-efficacy, not just the vulnerable ones.
That is a chilling thought. Okay, so if that's the internal emotional damage, what about the external? Let's talk about body image.
Right, so we shift focus to the visual, to appearance. And we know that media-transmitted body ideals, this constant stream of perfection, it deeply influences body dissatisfaction.
And it works through a couple of internal steps, right?
Two main ones. First, you internalize those ideals. You start to believe them. And second is self-discrepancy, that nagging gap between who you are and who you think you should be.
And the research is pretty clear on what those ideals are for men and women.
Oh, yes. The overwhelming ideal for women is thinness, and for men, it's muscularity.
And when they looked at adolescents on these visual platforms, the findings really underscore that point we made earlier.
That the type of use matters so much more than the amount of time.
Okay, break that down for us.
So passive consumption, just mindlessly scrolling through your feed without interacting, that was strongly linked to a decline in self-esteem.
Because that's where the envy and comparison happens.
It's a machine for it. But active engagement, so posting your own stuff, commenting, interacting with your actual friends, that was tied to a more positive self-concept. It's real connection.
And the gender differences here, especially in one of the 12-month studies, were just dramatic.
They were incredibly pronounced. For female adolescents, 72% reported feeling high appearance pressure. They felt they had to look attractive online.
And that had a real impact on their self-esteem.
A huge one. A significant average decline of 22% over just 12 months. And it was primarily driven by comparing their appearance to others. The emotions were anxiety and inadequacy.
And what about for the male adolescents?
The decline was less steep, about 10%, but the source of the pressure was totally different.
Not appearance.
Not primarily. For them, it was about competitive online activities. Their gaming performance, their online reputation, their status, 65% reported being concerned about that.
And the emotional response was different too.
Yeah, it was more about frustration, about social pressure related to performance. Not just how they looked. It shows how comparison tailors itself to whatever the perceived ideal is.
You know, it's worth just pausing on a fascinating little wrinkle in the research about which platforms were to blame. One study looking at what drove body dissatisfaction in females found that YouTube and Facebook were the main culprits. They triggered that self-discrepancy.
Yeah.
But surprisingly, Instagram wasn't a major factor in that specific study.
Right. And that kind of finding really throws a wrench in the common wisdom. We all assume Instagram is the number one bad guy for body image.
So why do you think that was? Was it the specific group they studied?
It could be. They noted that in their cohort, which was British adults, the constant visual stream on platforms like YouTube, you know, the fashion and fitness content, or even lifestyle posts on Facebook might have created a stronger overall pressure. It's a great reminder that these effects aren't universal.
Context matters. The devil's in the algorithm, maybe.
Maybe so.
Okay, let's completely shift gears here. We've talked a lot about the damage from mass comparison and information overload. So if these huge generalized communities are the problem, what about the opposite? What happens when people seek out tiny, focused online spaces?
This brings us to the power of the niche. And we looked at some really interesting findings on persistently small online communities, mostly on Reddit.
These little subreddits.
Exactly. And they totally challenge the idea that bigger is better. People get huge value from them, not because of their scale, but because they are so focused.
What's the motivation? I mean, we're talking about some really specific, almost esoteric topics.
That hyper-specific nature is the motivation. People are drawn to a niche for, say, a discontinued manga series, or for expectant parents all due in the same month. The focus is so narrow that the signal-to-noise ratio is incredibly high.
So you're not wasting time filtering out junk. You're getting exactly what you came for.
Precisely. It's all about utility, not popularity. And here's another key point that's so different from the general research we just talked about.
Oh, wow.
The people in these niches, they were primarily seeking expertise and knowledge, not deep personal friendships.
So they weren't there to cure loneliness?
No. In fact, most of them wanted to keep the focus on the content, on the topic, not on the individual users. The strangers stay strangers, but they're useful, focused strangers.
So if we connect this back to the bigger picture of digital health, it sounds like using these small communities is a very conscious strategy.
It's intentionality in practice. It's how savvy users curate their own experience to avoid that emotional comparison and information overload that you get on the bigger platforms.
And they're often nested niches, right? They exist inside larger communities.
That's right. There's a symbiotic relationship. You might find the broad topic on a huge platform, but you dive into the tiny subreddit for the really deep, specific knowledge.
So when we put all this together, what does it all mean? The research seems to strongly suggest our psychological health isn't really about the clock, not about the hours we spend.
No, it's about the quality and the motivation behind the clicks.
Passive viewing, that upward social comparison, tying your self-worth to validation, those are the real risk factors.
They are. But it does raise a pretty important question. Given that we know social media can eventually start to harm even people with high self-efficacy because of all the comparison, what does that really imply about this endless pursuit of online perfection? I mean, does the very structure of the attention economy make stable internal self-worth impossible for everyone in the long run?
And if actively curating your online world using these hyper-specific niche communities gives you focus and expertise instead of emotional inadequacy, maybe we should stop measuring digital health by trying to reduce screen time. Maybe we should measure it by increasing the percentage of time we spend in spaces built for learning, not for comparison and status. That's a thought worth carrying into your next scroll.
Thanks for joining us on the Logan River Academy Parent Podcast. Keep growing, keep connecting, and remember, you're not in this alone. Until next time, take care.